Next is Lee Berger to speak about extracts.
Hi. I want to segue a little bit into extraction by talking about a little more about the processing stuff, if I can, or the concentrates. And also about the dosage limits. You know, one activist who's not here, who's a lawyer, is Amy Margolis. And despite the differences that many of us have with her on many policy decisions, she at the Medical Rules Advisory Committee really stood up for us on these dosage limits. And basically what happened was the health authority tried to find a balance between Amy's arguments and the arguments from a group that showed up, you know, at the very last minute with the OLCC, the pediatric emergency room physicians, who are all, what about the children? And, you know, so OLCC or OHA has struck this balance. I'm hopeful that they, you know, with adequate public comment, we might be able to move them. But I think at least in the short term, we may well be stuck with what are the lowest dosage limits anywhere for adults. And it's just going to be one of those things, as many legislators certainly tell me, that, you know, we just need to wait and it'll be phased in. About 10 days ago, I was in Baltimore at the Patients Out of Time conference, and on the day when Pennsylvania signed the medical marijuana law and became the 24th medical marijuana state, in Pennsylvania, they're going to study whether to have flowers for 2 years, and then they'll begin to implement that. So the fact is, we are moving at a fast pace. I know it doesn't feel that way sometimes, but it is. The second thing I wanted to mention was about concentrates, is that on the homegrown, you know, the 4 plants, 8 ounces that all adults are allowed to cultivate, we're also allowed to create and share concentrates. When we were drafting Measure 91, I called this the, I want, you know, when we have a potluck dinner, I want to be able to bring dessert, right? So it's really, there isn't any prohibition on that. What there is a prohibition on is on extraction. And it's an unfortunate reality, because the reality is that hundreds, perhaps thousands of patients and growers were safely blasting butane hash, and a couple of idiots blew up houses or a bathroom at a gas station. And it's the kind of thing that created a place where the legislature reacted to it the way that we created the Medical Marijuana Act, which is that if you have a license, then you're accepted from arrest and prosecution. But if you don't have a license, it's still a serious crime. In fact, in the classification of crimes that both Floyd and I spoke about, the one exception is the unlawful manufacture of marijuana that involves involves unlicensed extracting. And that went into effect because, although we used to, back in the day, only use the emergency clause, which makes a law effective on passage when it really, no kidding, was an emergency, now the legislature does it all the time so that we can't do a referendum, basically, is the only good reason for that. And so that went into effect March 1st, that you couldn't process unless you had a license, except nobody could have a license because they weren't accepting applications until April 1st. Anybody here get caught in that clusterfuck? My God, how fast are things moving when the legislature, intending to not make you a criminal, makes you a criminal? So I was involved a little bit as a part of, I'm legal counsel for, I think it's the Oregon Extractors Association, in trying to resolve that, to make it so that it was like, you know, being a patient, that upon application, and then of course, since it's the OHA, they made it completed application, then you have the protection of the law. But, you know, that was a huge problem. Speaking of law violations, just to go a little off topic if I could, you know, one thing I've been trying to do over the last 5 years is to transform my practice from, you know, Cedar mentioned that I had represented, I was honored to represent him years ago. And but, you know, I don't like really doing criminal stuff anymore. And the reason I did work for 20 years to end cannabis prohibition was to get out of doing criminal law, to be able to sit around the table and conspire about how to cultivate and extract and distribute legally, instead of hearing sad stories from nice people about how, you know, their interaction with the government included a raid in their home. But lately there's been an uptick in my practice of driving under the influence of cannabis. So I want to remind everybody that it's against the law to drive under the influence of cannabis. Floyd also mentioned that we included in the Measure 91 three times that the Measure 91 made no changes to the medical law. We also included that it made no changes to the driving under the influence law. We gave that to the OLCC, and the OLCC is required to report to the legislature in 2017. And my good news for today is that I think they're likely to recommend that that policy be continued, and that we're not likely to become a per se state where they take you and forcibly draw your blood. I'm really hopeful about that. Thank you. You know, driving under the influence doesn't mean, you know, I'm all fucked up. It means that you are impaired to a perceptible degree. It means if you look like you're really impaired, then it's a problem. And in the cases, what I see are these sorts of problems. And so here's my free legal advice about driving under the influence. The first is STFU. Does everybody know what that means? It means shut the fuck up. Because, and actually my friend Jeff Steinborn, who's kind of like the dean of cannabis lawyers in the Northwest, he's graduated from Yale Law School in 1969, he's in Seattle. What he says to tell the officer is, my lawyer said he'll charge me double if I speak to you. As much as I'd like to answer your questions, I can't afford to. That puts everybody at ease. The second thing is, you know, all of us cannabis criminal lawyers have for years been saying, yes, P, no, DRE. What happens is you are invited to take field sobriety tests. If they determine that they have probable cause to believe that you're under the influence, they take you to the station. They ask you to take a breath test. If it blows 0-0, they ask you to provide a urine sample. As with the breath test, if you don't provide a urine sample, your license is suspended. You have a right to an administrative hearing, but unless there's some illegality by the police in the way that they obtain the sample, the suspension is likely to be upheld. All that the urine testing does, however, is show past use. It doesn't quantify when you had previously used. The drug recognition exam is problematic, and it's complicated, and it's certainly way beyond the topic of this conversation, but generally, the advice that criminal lawyers have is you have a right to refuse it. That right cannot be held against you, and it's okay to refuse the DRE. I think I'm pretty comfortable. One really exciting thing that the legislature did in response to the medical industry is, or not the medical industry, but in the medical marijuana movement, is it allowed patients to take their medicine to processors and have the processors process it and return the processed medicine to the patient. And, Pete and I were talking about it, and as best, and help me if I'm misstating this, Floyd, but as best I recall, at least in statute, that applies both to OHA licenses and to OLCC licenses. And so I guess the very last thing I'll say is, I said early on that I thought we had accomplished in Oregon the best melding of the medical system and the adult use system with the least harm to patients. But where it's really pretty ridiculous is in processing. Processing for medical grade oil is exactly the same as processing for adult use oil. There's no reason on God's green earth why we should have to pay $4,000 twice to be able to supply both markets. And I guess so the last thought I would leave you with is that as with you know, we're in this exciting transitional time, and it's really, you know, you could get the medical license until you get the adult use license, because when you have the adult use license, you're able, as I mentioned, to be able to sell to patients. I think the OLCC is likely to adopt rules that would permit that. And you can sell, you know, to medical dispensaries, you know, as long as they continue to exist. So that's it. I'm, you know, I'll be here to answer other specific questions that you have. Thank you very much.